Votre radio Autre Culture, bonjour, émission également diffusée sur audiopeople.fr. Dans le cadre des Audio Days du 11 et 12 avril 2011 à Paris, nous recevons David Josephson. Vous savez, David Josephson, le célèbre concepteur de microphones de la société Josephson Engineering.
Good morning and sorry for the delay. I guess we don't like to stay in the bunker forever. I'm David Josephson from Josephson Engineering. We try to make microphones for specialist applications where they're not exactly the same as everyone else's. We don't try to the same sort of patterns and the same sort of functions that everyone else does, normally because they are already doing something well. There's no reason for us to try to do yet another one, a me too or something. But of course, the physics and the applications of such things are all apply to everyone. And so we try to understand what's going on with the design and the application of microphones. And we find that a lot of people are not as familiar as they could be with some of the basic principles. So we try to combine in a presentation like this some theory and some practical information, and of course some ideas about microphones that are special from our company. If you look in the literature, textbooks and so on, there is a lot of good information about how microphones work if you are only talking about pressure microphones, omnidirectional microphones that pick up the same from all directions. But of course, working in the real world, we often must require directional characteristics where we want sound from some directions and not from others. And the normal way of doing that is to measure both the pressure, which is a scalar quantity, and the pressure gradient, which of course is the difference in pressure between two points. So it is the slope or the gradient or the difference in pressure. And of course, that direction where those two points are determines the axis that we're measuring on and determines the directional characteristics. We will be talking about a particular technique and a particular microphone for adjusting how you use pressure and gradient to make a more flexible kind of recording, but it is the same with all directional microphones. Almost all directional microphones function by using pressure and gradient, and everything that you can think of from an SM57 to a little camcorder microphone, if it has directional characteristics, will be using the same quantities. And it's a good idea to think not so quickly about what is the pattern of the microphone, but how does it get its pattern? And when you understand how it gets its pattern, then you can make some better decisions about how to use it. We hope, anyway. So we want to think about two concepts, scalars and vectors. A non-directional microphone, an omnidirectional microphone, a pressure microphone, responds to pressure from any direction. It doesn't really matter. The opening in the microphone can be very, very small because all it's doing is sensing the pressure, which is the relative number of particles of air in a given volume of space. In vacuum, there is none. There are no air particles. As the pressure is increased, the number of particles is more, the density is higher. And that's all you're measuring. But the directional microphones, the directional sensor responds to a vector, as I mentioned. It is the difference in pressure between two points. As long as we keep these two things, they're really quite different in how microphones work. Keep them in the front of our mind. It will be easier to understand how things are going. So we can take a balloon and measure the pressure inside with some sort of sensor, and it doesn't matter where the pressure is coming from. It's going to press on the balloon. It's going to squeeze it a little bit, and that's going to make the pressure go up. That is the density of air particles per unit volume. And so it has an omnidirectional response. No matter where it's coming from, we have this. We're using this unit circle here, where to show the directional characteristic is the same in any direction. We have rings here for minus 10, 20, 30 dB and so on, but the actual response is the same at zero all the way around. If we measure the pressure gradient between two points, it's more like a sail. It's a boundary. There is pressure coming from one direction. There's less pressure from the other direction. It's pushing the sail in that direction. And this is the important thing to remember. Now a vector has a sign. Pressure is just more or less. The vector is going to be more in one direction or more in the other direction. You now have two ways, two potential polarities, according to which direction the wind is coming from. If the wind is coming from here, it's going to push the boat that way. If the wind is coming from here, it's going to push the boat that way. So we have a response in the front, which is some unit quantity, and then around toward the side, there is no response because the pressure is coming to the side of the sail. This is assuming an imaginary sail, of course, without a sailor there. And the pressure on both sides of the sail is the same, so it doesn't move. Now, on the back, the amount is the same. It is the same sensitivity in the back direction, but the polarity is reversed because it's pushing in the other direction. Keep these two basic concepts in mind, the pressure and the gradient. As the direction changes from completely one side, here is from 0 degrees, our response is plus one. That is from signal arriving from the front, for example, of a microphone, has a, we just arbitrarily decide at zero. At 90 degrees, it's zero. There is no response. At 180 degrees, it's minus one. This is a cosine curve, and so you can find in many explanations of microphones where the pressure gradient response is modeled as cosine. So you have some sensitivity times cosine of the angle. Cosine of the angle gives you this curve. And you can arrive at all of the interesting patterns just by mixing a unit response and a cosine response. That's all the math I will do today, so there won't be a test. All of the most common microphones we use have a cardioid pattern. That's this one. And nearly all of the microphones that we commonly use achieve this pattern by mixing a pressure response and a pressure gradient response in equal amounts. You notice the cardioid is a little bigger. That's because we have this unit response here toward the front of the microphone, and we have a unit response toward the front of the microphone of the pressure gradient term. You add them together and they double, so it's plus 6 dB larger toward the front. Now, toward the rear, the omnidirectional, the pressure response is uniform, it's the same. The pressure gradient response is also the same, but the sign is reversed. So if you add the pressure with the exact opposite, the result is zero. And that's the basic concept behind every cardioid microphone, where we cancel the sounds arriving from the rear. It turns out that if we want any other pattern, we just use a little more or a little less of each of these terms, and all of the various patterns that you are accustomed to change the position and the size of this null, we call it, the rear response. And it may end up with various other patterns. For example, if we take a figure 8, that is a pure pressure gradient response, and we add just a little bit of the pressure or omni response, we get a hypercardioid where we have this same, where did it go? The same back lobe, but it's smaller. And the nulls are not to the back, they're to a little bit to the side. These are some of the sort of ratios that we can commonly use. Here is the pressure and the gradient at a ratio that makes a hypercardioid. Instead of half and half, which was what we were looking at, here is one-third, 0.33 of, we call the pressure term W, and two-thirds of the pressure gradient, or X. If we use the reverse of two-thirds of W and one-third of X, we get a subcardioid or hypocardioid. And any other combination makes any other of the standard patterns that we are normally expecting on a variable pattern microphone. So it's good to remember that in nearly every case, whether, for example, in our 715, which is switchable between cardioid and omni, it's switchable by a mechanical shutter in the back. When it's open, it lets in half pressure and half gradient. We can close it all the way down so that it's only pressure. There is no possibility for gradient because the back is closed. Then it gets an omni pattern. If we open it just a little bit, it gives a subcardioid pattern. So we can do it with a mechanical shutter. You can do it holding your fingers around to block the back port. You can do it by using two diaphragms and looking at the difference of them. But the basic principle is the same no matter what. So that's fine for single microphones where we have a fixed ratio. We decided some years ago to try to make this ratio available to the user of the microphone, maybe during the session, maybe later. So this is the C700A. It has a pressure microphone and a pressure gradient microphone. These happen to be an Omni and a figure eight capsule of fairly conventional design. We don't do any processing or pattern selection or anything else in the microphone. We just buffer those two signals so that they can be recorded separately on a multi-track recorder, and then you can decide what pattern you want in the mixdown. We have a couple of sound examples that we'll play with here in a little bit. People have said, oh, well, you should make this box with all knobs on it so that we can do this in the recording. Yeah, well, we can do that. And in fact, we made such a box to demonstrate. And our experience has been that people try this and they say, yeah, but I don't really need the box now. I can record these separately and I can do it later on. Yes, that's right. Pay attention. So then we say, okay, we are interested in whatever directional pattern we can make with one microphone. But there are a lot of folks who say, well, why don't we extend that so that we have some left and right information too? And the ambisonics people, the sound field development from many years ago, Michael Gerson and Peter Craven and so on, came up with a notation, a system of naming for the pressure, the front-facing gradient, just like we've been talking about, and they've also defined a side-facing gradient and an up-and-down gradient. And they call this format B-format. In the cases of the sound field microphones, they make this with four capsules and a lot of processing to generate the W, X, Y, and Z signals. Well, I've talked with these folks many times over the years, and they tell me that the reason they did that was that they could not get good enough figure eight pure pressure gradient capsules at the time they were doing their original work. So they came up with the idea of using a tetrahedron. And of course, it works quite well, but we can do a little better today. And so we just make what we call native B-format microphones. That's the same 700 that you saw with an additional figure eight capsule toward the side. And the outputs of these capsules are exactly the B format terms. It is the standard signal format for ambisonics, and all of the processing that you can do in ambisonics is also the same as our native B format output. The omnidirectional term is the same. We call it the W. The figure eight facing front to back is the X channel, and this response again is the is related to the cosine of the angle between the front and whatever your sound source is. Y is the figure eight facing side to side, same thing, just displaced 90 degrees. Regular B format has another capsule for up and down, or another derived capsule for up and down. I decided that it was too much bother to do this, that most people didn't use it so much. You can tilt the microphone. And I could never get it to be as symmetrical as I wanted it to be. So we just make the with the three signals. We can do it with four. If someone really needs elevation, we can do it. So once again, the omnidirectional mic produces the W. The front-facing figure eight or bidirectional produces X, and the side-facing produces Y. So the first thing we do when we're making a stereo pickup is to is the same now as MS stereo. This kind of processing is the same as mid-side. So first we set the pattern of the response that we want by determining what the front-facing directional pattern is. That would be equivalent to the M microphone in MS stereo. So here's the formula. A is how much of the omni, B is how much of the figure eight. And in our calculations that we showed before, we always choose these as a ratio to result in a sum that is one. So it's 0.5 of the W and 0.5 of the X, for example, gives us cardioid. 0.33 and 0.67 and so on. Any other ratio still ends up with the same output level. But you don't need to do it that way. It's just the ratio that matters. The really trick here that happens is that, as in MS, if you mix any two figure eight patterns, the output is always still a figure eight, just turned. And so if we, this also applies to any pattern that's derived from the figure eight. So we have a cardioid, for example, facing forward. If we add another figure eight pattern, this is, again, the same as MS, facing to the side, we can turn it to the side. If it's all figure eight, we get a figure eight face turned a little bit, depending on how much of the side or Y channel. If we have already added some W to this, so it's a cardioid, then the resulting cardioid pattern turns to the side. And just to keep in mind, this can be done with our 700S microphone. It can be done with any two figure eight microphones and any pressure microphone. You just need those three W, X, and Y signals. It can be done with a sound field microphone. We can make a surround pickup from the same thing. Front center, again, is the A times the W plus B. Those A and B are our two numbers that set the pattern. And that gives us front center. That's the M signal facing front, just the same. Front left is that plus how much ever of the Y we want to turn it to some direction. Front right is the same minus how much ever of the Y we want to turn it in some direction. If we wanted to, we could turn one more than the other. Now, we can make a surround left and right, too, by reversing the phase of the figure eight. Now we have the figure eight pointing backwards instead of pointing forward. So surround left is the same omni minus the figure eight pattern, or you can say the figure eight pointing to the back, plus however we want to turn it. Surround right is the omni minus the figure eight minus. And these phase relationships just decide which way this lobe ends up being pointed. And of course, if we want to make the 0.1 channel, we just take a low pass from the omni, and there it is. The omni is flat down to about 10 hertz. So you can, if you have low-frequency effects in your orchestra, you can have it. So here's the microphone, the 700S, which is just like the A that you saw, but with the additional figure eight pattern facing sideways and three outputs instead of two. Let's see. I have a couple of sets of sound examples. First one is a bluegrass session that I think will be working easily enough here. Before I get into the to the sound examples, are there any questions about the theory or the practice of doing this? Yeah.
Yes. Why the two capsules, the omnidirectional and the pressure gradient capsule, are not the same size? I wonder why.
It's simply a bunch of practical considerations. We can make a good quiet omni in that size. If we want a figure eight with a uniform frequency response, the diaphragm must be more compliant. It must be more sensitive to motion of a volume of air rather than just pressure. And we could make it so small, but in order to balance the sound characteristics and have the frequency response similar in the two capsules, we chose those two diameters. So you will be patient with me. I'm not a Pro Tools expert. We have the three channels here, three input channels are W, X, and then we have constructed the Y channel, which is, I wanted to do it as simply as possible without making a special plugin. These are two copies of the same track. One of them is reversed in phase. So we have the Y and minus Y and linked them here. So we will start out with the Y channel muted. And I've chosen a sort of hypercardioid pattern here. Here's the Omni, and here is the figure eight. And when I start the, I'll just set these to zero, unmute them. There's also a spot mic on the bass that I'll bring in a little bit later, but right now it's muted too. I will start with it mono, and then I'll bring, we have the phase scope here showing what is happening. And I'll gradually bring up the Y channel so you can hear what happens as we bring it in. Again, this is the same as MS, except that we now have control of the pattern of the M. So, it's just a mono signal. More. Let's see, there's no master here. Can you go? So you can see here, it's just here in the center.
And it comes from the poor orphan child that must be clothed and fed. And it comes from the poor orphan child that must be clothed and fed. Savior thee, them by the hand. Savior thee.
Can add too much Y and it sounds too wide. You see, almost completely anti-correlated. We can decide we want two figure eights instead of a cardioid. We'll take the Omni out. Now it's Blumlein. We decided the bass was a little thin, so we put a spot mic on the bass.
They say to us, my papa's dead and I have no mother now.
Right.
They say to us, my papa's dead and I have no
A little later in the day, we will. I've also set this up to generate the surround from the same pickup. This is just the single microphone. You can hear where the various people are. Bass player is singing the lead, and she's moving around, so you can hear that. Okay. Any questions about that session?
Can you re-explain the assignment of the channels, please?
Okay. One channel is the Omni or W channel. We have it panned center. The next one is the X or front-facing figure eight, also panned center. There's no other processing going on, and the ratio here determines the pattern that results for the front or M microphone. Here is the Y or sideways facing figure eight, and here's the same thing reversed in phase. So that we can, and one of them is the front facing, or the side left facing is panned left, the right facing is panned right. You saw the picture of Anna Klein there. The last one is from the Cabrillo Music Festival in Santa Cruz, her piece called Rewind. Young and innocent, but she's writing some very powerful music. Again, in this case, we have some more things going on in the session. But the same basic idea. We have a W channel here, the Y channel for the front-facing figure eight. The X channel for the front-facing figure eight, and the Y channel for the side. We have some outriggers for Omni microphones for a little bit more bass response, a little bit wider width. This is a large orchestra ensemble. There's also a big reverb in here that I'll leave off. These are other spot mics, but all we really need for this demonstration is what's happening with the 700S. Again, we'll start with it in mono, and I will bring up the stereo information when we're ready for it. This is the Cabrillo Festival Orchestra. It's about 80-piece orchestra in a hall of about 2,000 people. So I picked this sort of hypercardioid pattern as where we want to begin. And it's the setup is a normal orchestra with percussion on the left and brass on the right. Wanted a little bit more width in the stereo, so we added these outriggers, two a little closer, two a little further apart. But as you might expect, the localization is more precise without them. We can try a little bit of the spot mics on the percussion, brass, bass, a little more focus. Questions about that one, or about this technique in general. Those are the demos that I have. Christoph will have copies of the individual sound file tracks, not of this one, but of the bluegrass sessions that you can take home and play with if you like. This is Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium. It's a sort of multi-purpose building made 50, 60 years ago, and it's they use it for basketball and concerts, and it's a troublesome place to record. That's why the spot mics mostly.
Jefferson microphones,
yes.
Too?
Yes, of course.
C42s?
The Outrigger mics are 617 Omnis, four of them. Two of them with 1-inch capsules, the further ones. Two of them with 1/2-inch capsules, they're the closer in ones. That's the standard 617 set. I believe the brass solo mic is a C715, and the percussions are C42s, and the bass is a C42. Other questions? Go ahead.
Not on this. Why did you choose Microtech Göffel capsules for your C617?
Because I couldn't make or get any better one from anyone else.
B&K?
Certainly not Brühl & Kjær. Unfortunately.
Why?
The old Brühl & Kjær capsules were excellent, but the new ones are using a steel diaphragm material that is not as uniform in all directions as the old-fashioned nickel one. And Göffel makes that in a particularly clever way that results in a directional response at the sides that is exactly uniform, and that's not the case so much with a rolled diaphragm. There will be this, I'm not sure when I can get into the first studio, but I will have some of these available also for playback in surround, and you're free to experiment if you like. And I'll be here for questions the rest of the day.
Last question. If you had to put the Z capsule, where would you put it?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Up, down?
Well, of course, it has to be in the line with the other capsules, and it would probably be above at the top of the stack, so that it would be diffracted. As you notice in the 700, it has these two hemispheres, and the Z capsule would be next to one of those hemispheres,
yeah.
So that it picked up as uniformly as possible. Okay, thank you.
Radio, autre culture.